So today we're going to talk about Nanchuan, who was Matsu's Dharma successor. He was born in the year 747, and he began his Buddhist training by studying the sutras and other philosophical commentaries or writings of Buddhism. He was ordained when he was 30 years old, which means that at that point he was pretty much an expert in the sutras and the commentaries that came with those sutras. After this period, he traveled to study Chan Buddhism under Matsu, who basically flipped his world upside down. I can imagine a rather bookish Nanchuan showing up there and being completely shocked by having his nose twisted and being hit by this with a stick by Matsu. His enlightenment experience is not recorded, but however it happened, Matsu freed him from much of the intellectual concepts that he had spent years taking in and digesting. Not to worry though, Nanchuan did eventually hold his own with Matsu. One day he was serving rice porridge from a bucket, and Matsu asked him what was in the bucket. And Nanchuan replied, "This old fellow should keep his mouth shut and not dare say such words." So the other students were rather dumbfounded that he would talk to the great Matsu like that, and so they had nothing to say. In the year 795, Nanchuan struck out on his own, and there's a couple of accounts. One account was that he built a primitive hut on Mount Nanchuan, which was already named Mount Nanchuan. Another account is that he built a more elaborate temple there. Both accounts agree that he spent 30 years on top of the mountain and never came down, and that he took Nanchuan as his Dharma name. I suspect that he had a rather strong following at that point that helped him build these lodgings and, you know, bring food and necessities to him, because I think an isolated hermit would find it difficult to live at the top of a mountain for a year, let alone 30. So, during this period, his influence and teachings grew, and the mountain became a pilgrimage for aspiring students. In fact, the governor of the province where the mountain was, Lu Xuan, eventually asked him to come down and promote his teachings in a more accessible location. At first, Lu Xuan protected him by being his patron, but eventually became a student, and then later actually became one of his Dharma successors. Nanchuan came from a background of philosophical study, but his awakening experience showed him that too much reliance on concepts can be a stumbling block. And just as a personal aside, I find that often to be the case with Kong-Anists. I'll give the teacher a conceptual answer, and they pick up that stick. As a teacher, he favored direct experience over lofty concepts. One time a monk showed up and asked him how to get to Nanchuan. Where was Nanchuan? And he replied, "This sickle costs $3. And the monk said, "Well, I didn't ask you about the sickle. I asked you where Nanchuan was." And Nanchuan's reply was, "I always enjoy using it." So much like Matsu before him, Nanchuan emphasized direct experience. Perhaps if the monk had, you know, paid attention and introduced himself, he might have learned that he was already at his destination. Nanchuan had 17 Dharma successors, the most notable of which is Chao Chu. Chao Chu's enlightenment experience is recorded in Everyday Mind is the True Way. You may have encountered this in your Dharma dialogues this year during Kilche. In it, Chao Chu asks, what is the true way? And Nanchuan says, in effect, it's nothing special. It's everyday mind. But Nanchuan insists, do I need to just keep it or let it go? To help Chao Chu cut through his confusion, he says, understanding is illusion. Non-understanding is blankness. If you would completely attain the true way of not thinking, it is like space, clear and void. This reminds me of when we say rest in open spaciousness. You may have heard that before. It also has a flavor of Taoism, where being in tune with the Tao involves effortless action. Once when Lu Xuan was going to leave to take up his governor duties, Nanchuan asked him how he would rule. And Lu Xuan said, well, I'll rule with wisdom. Nanchuan said, well, if this is true, the people will suffer for it. And at first glance, this sounds like a strange response. You know, if you must have a ruler, then wouldn't you want a wise ruler? But looking at it from a Taoist point of view may give some clarity here. There's an excerpt from chapter 18 of the Tao Te Ching that goes, when the great Tao is forgotten, kindness and morality arise. When wisdom and intelligence are born, the great pretense begins. The Tao can be understood as the way, the underlying principle that governs all things. But it's slippery. If you name it, you've lost it. It's unknowable, inconceivable, the flow of existence. But you can always trust that it's right here and right now. Does that sound familiar to anyone? So why do I bring up Taoism? Well, when Buddhism entered China, it encountered Taoism, and the two philosophies began to influence each other. Zen Buddhism came out of that, and it picked up the structured practices of Buddhism along with the naturalistic and experiential focus of Taoism. So when we talk about before thinking mind or don't know mind, we're following the teachings of Nanchuan and of Taoism. When we forget to start with don't know mind, and we don't see clearly the current situation, we can be trapped by our preconceived ideas. Rather than responding appropriately to the situation, we begin to react based on our baggage or karma, and from there, suffering easily begins. Which brings me to the ninth gate. Nanchuan kills a cat. No talk about Nanchuan would be complete without this koan. The koan is very simple. The monks of the Eastern Halls and the Western Halls were disputing over a cat. So Nanchuan picked up the cat and said, please give me one word and I will save this cat. Just one word. But no one could answer, and he killed the cat. Last time we talked about violence in Zen, and this is certainly one of those moments. There's a very insightful commentary about this koan in The Garden of Flowers and Weeds by Yuan Wu that I recommend. This is effectively a new writing of the Blue Cliff Record. According to Yuan Wu, violent language is not present in Shakyamuni's sutras as recorded in the Pali Canon, nor is it in the Mahayana sutras or in other Chinese Buddhist sects. But it's got a special place in Zen writings. And this reflects the chaotic and bloody times they were living in. There were invaders threatening to overrun the existing kingdoms, and rebellion from within occurred as well. An Lushan was a regional commander who led a rebellion against the Tang dynasty. And about 2 years after he started the rebellion, he was assassinated by his son. Later, his son, who was leading the rebellion, was then killed by one of his father's allies. That ally was eventually killed by his own son. So, not surprisingly, the rebellion did fail. But during this time, the Tang dynasty had three different emperors. And eventually, even though the rebellion was defeated, the damage triggered the collapse of the Tang dynasty and caused vast casualties amongst the population. During these brutalities, the emperors, who controlled the fate of the Buddhist temples, demanded a culture of war and masculinity. And Zen teachers responded by emphasizing violence in their writings, and according to Yuan Wu, it paid off when they gained the favor of their allies, of their rulers. So, my personal thoughts focus more on the humanity of Nanchuan. As a parent of two young children, they're not young anymore, but back then, I recall the number of times when I was faced with it's mine. No, it's not, it's mine. They just seemed endless. And so I guess I could see possibly the frustration that Nanchuan was dealing with respect to the monks. And so perhaps in that moment of frustration, he just grabbed the cat and blurted out those words without thinking. And then in the ensuing silence, he realized that he had painted himself into a corner. And with all the eyes of the monks looking at him, the thought of a Zen master backing down was perhaps inconceivable to him. I don't know, maybe I'm projecting a little bit, I don't know. But I offer this not as an excuse of his violent action, but as a possible way to enter deeper into the story, to see the humanity, the flawed humanity of Nanchuan, even though he had awakened. In the evening, when Chao Chu returned to the temple, Nanchuan told him of the incident. Chao Chu took his shoe off, put it on his head, and walked away. Nanchuan said, "If you had been there, I could have saved the cat." I can almost hear the pain and regret in Nanchuan's words there. So what do we take away from our story of Nanchuan? His life and teachings show us that the path to wisdom isn't solely paved by intellectual understanding. It requires a willingness to let go of our preconceived notions and embrace the present moment. Like Nanchuan, we all have the potential for profound insight and human fallibility. The story of the cat, while unsettling, serves as a stark reminder of the complexities of human life and the importance of mindful action. Ultimately, Nanchuan's legacy encourages us to cultivate a don't-know mind and to trust in the inherent wisdom of the present moment amidst the chaos and uncertainty of life. If we can do that, we can reduce the suffering in this world, and perhaps we can save the cat.